Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. This week on Minority Corner, she is back. It's been a long time. She shouldn't have left us without a dope beat to set to. It is Teresa Atteridge, and she is a biracial, bicoastal, bisexual, currently living in NYC, lover of cartoons, high fantasy, and all other forms of socially conscious escapism, a proud AAPI actor, writer, and lover of spam. And we have so much to talk about. Everything old is new again because voter suppression, it's back up in Georgia. So we unpack these wild laws that are being rushed and passed and the caste system at work of how what happened when a black legislator just tried to view this racist bill juxtaposed to January 6th. We unpack, what does conservatism really mean? What is it that we're really saying? We have to ask the right questions to get to truth and reconciliation and heal this mess. Plus, some really great TV and movie recommendations starring some very talented AAPI folks. Are things changing? Well, Teresa has a word about that because then Teresa takes center stage in our main corner, unpacking all the diversity stats from Hollywood to Broadway and why representation in media, why it matters what people see, especially in light of the rise of attacks against the AAPI community. It is important. Representation matters. And we unpack all of that, plus lots of wonderful, delightful anecdotes and fun. Get ready to learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Make your heart go.
Boom, boom. Supernova girl.
I just took that over from you. That was Xenon, girl from the 21st century.
Yes,
coming and live at us.
You know, and now we're here in the 21st century, and I want a refund.
Oh shit!
I'm not a fan.
You're right.
I don't know who made these decisions.
I always like to check my calendar, which is on my imaginary watch, and I go, wait, what year is it? And then I'm like, wait, oh, this is happening? Yeah, this is happening. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, like the 20s are going to be, it's the reckoning 20s. Everything that was not dealt with is coming to the full surface, like a nasty ass pimple that is about to
getting
erupt.
Hit with a reckoning ball, as it were.
Yes, get Miley on that album. She doesn't got a twerk or appropriate black culture for her to make that a hit song on it. So
no.
In case you missed it last week, because Republicans like are clutching their pearls. Also, sidebar caveat, somebody brought this up to me. Why is it mm-hmm. that when you're with, like, we've been doing a lot of, like, you know, anti-racism conversations recently at work yeah. and just amongst friends, but I have noticed that sometimes when some people, and listen, we're learning how to, like, have these conversations, but some people have, like, as they're talking and they'll say, you know, but, I grew up in a conservative household when, like, talking about their parents, right? Someone brought this up to me. Why is it that, like, conservatism has anything to do with oppression of other people or racism, right? And so I think, like, when you're hearing that, my question will be, and I think we got to start asking questions about the words that people are using, because I think it's more important, like, words matter so much and get people to the point of what it is that you're really saying. And so when you're saying that, because honestly, like, what does racism and the oppression of other people have to do anything with conservative ideals, right? I thought y'all wanted, like, small government.
Conservative is a really convenient paintbrush.
Yes.
Right now, right? Because it's like, it's alluding to sort of like this pre sort of like Reaganomics era where it's like, you were able to be like, if you said you were conservative, it's like, oh yeah, I'm conservative. I'm like, you know, fiscally responsible, small government. Like
I love God, like religious, value, right? Like conservative family values.
Yeah.
But I think, and I just like, I am like of the game, and I get that is the umbrella that I think that maybe they could get away with it because I was a kid, like bebopping around to like, mm-hmm. you know, Gem and the Holograms. So I don't know what was really going on back then, right?
Oh, yes. So, James and the Holograms.
Listen, I was obsessed with Gem. So anyways, I don't know what was going on for real reals. Like, I just know what I see in documentaries and like the history books or whatnot. But I'm going to give y'all a pass back then. You're like, oh, okay, I'm fiscally conservative and family values, blah, blah, blah. I still think all of that is coded in like white supremacy and white racism. But I'm going to give y'all the benefit of the doubt. Now, I'm an old ass man. See everything that's going on. I'm connecting the dots. I've read the books. I saw the documentaries. And now it's just coded language for racism. And so I think my question, going back to my point, is I would say if next time you hear somebody or you find yourself saying, I grew up in a conservative household or conservative community, the actual sentence is more along the lines, here's a practice sentence, is I grew up in a house or in a community that had racist tendencies or practiced racist ideas or ideas that upheld white supremacy. Because that's really what it is that you're saying. And I think we got to get to the root. Because I think if you say that, it might even force you to have more of a reckoning and also to get to work. Like, your family is drowning in racism and they need your help. And that, to me, is a bigger call to action than just like, oh, they have conservative ideas, and that just makes it like, oh, we just disagree about how we should handle this bill or law. No, those bills and laws are about to oppress the rights of a specific group of people because of a caste system based on their race.
Mm-hmm. I love being like, when people are like, yeah, you know, I'm conservative. I'm like, conservative like in which way?
Like the way they dress?
Just like out of curiosity. Like, which way do you mean?
Yeah, ask questions. Ask questions.
You know, like, it's, and the thing is that it's like, I think there's a constructive way to like sit and help someone deconstruct that if they truly are like, ah. But I also think there's some people who like, it's an easy way, yes, to not have to explain, yes, it. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it's very, mm-hmm, dismissive, you know, instead of just being like, oh yeah, no, like my grandpa's definitely, right, very racist. Like, no one wants to like own it, because then it's like, well, what conversations, yes, are you having, right, with them? Like, I know that I've been told by my extended family, they're like, Teresa, like, you shouldn't fight with, like, your grandma. Like, she's old. And I'm like, yeah, and she's voting. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's, yeah, not a cutoff. Yeah, right. I really feel like.
Yeah. And she, you know, still and, votes. And it, you was, know what? Her friends vote. She talks to people. And it's like, I mean, we have a moral civic.
She reposts articles about thinking Meghan Markle is sneaky.
Okay, yes, talk to
and
her.
And I'm like, because you're racist, it's just because, yes, she's black. Like, you literally, like, it's the only reason you don't like her. Like,
I it's almost, it's like, I think a moral civic obligation to do that, especially for the people that you love, right? Because it's almost, it's like being in, yes, a false and fake relationship, really. And don't you want genuine, authentic relationships with people? And it's being able to have those difficult conversations. They're difficult. But here's the thing. We've already seen what happens when we don't have those conversations. It's called January 6th insurrection, because nobody talked to those people. So many people were just like, oh no, don't have those conversations. And then next thing you know, and then so Georgia got to Georgia. They're like, oh, well, we can't let it be, you know, blue. And in one single day, this is why local elections matter so much, because yes, on the Senate and the national election, we were able to flip it blue. And the local legislatures across the country, especially in the South, they're still majority Republican, and they're able to pass these crazy laws. So they, like, this bill went in one day, passed everything in the local Georgia legislature. In one day, it went from like 10 pages to almost like 100 pages. And all these great things, like, you know, that allowed Georgia to have. And again, we had Trump's administration said we had the safest election in U.S. history since they've been like calculating. Not one of the. And that was Trump's people who said that. And so there's a lot of great highlights that they put in there to just essentially, you know, vote. The Voting Rights Act was, you know, essentially gutted. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg was like, this is like throwing your umbrella away in the rain just because you're not getting rained on, right? In that exact moment. Like, we still need these things. Very similar to how we didn't finish doing Reconstruction. you know, it was so much for, it was so much more like, oh, okay, we did that, that's enough. And it was more like, okay, let's, you know, white people, let's shake hands and be kumbaya all together. So they, the law requires now a photo ID in order to vote absentee. After more than 13 million Georgia voters used this option during the COVID-19 pandemic, it also cuts time that people have to request an absentee ballot. It limits ballot mail drop boxes and even when you can drop them off, like specific times. So if you work in the evening and you can't drop it off at a specific time, it limits like the amount, like the days that we can, you can even do voting ahead of time. All these things to make voting so much harder. You can't even pass out water or food to people waiting in these long lines. Like, yeah,
that's what got, you know, it's just one of those things where I'm like, are we just gonna have to like,
yes,
have a bunch of people walking around with bags and drop them, be like, oh my god, I'm so, so I'm such a klutz, and they just have like a water bottle, a sandwich, like a like a little handwritten note, and it's like, oh, my mom packed me this.
But isn't it insane? Like, this is why my... does it have to be like doing a Spartan race to go vote? Or like, what's the, you know, this crazy like inferno bloodbath?
James, you know,
like,
why?
I do know why. Oh, I know why.
You know why.
I was making sure y'all done knowing why. And so when people come out and say, this is not America, no, this is America. It has been systemically hard for anybody to vote that is not rich and white. And everybody else has been, we've been trying to just make it so other people can have voting and access to it.
I'm like, do we just have to have everyone watch the, like, Childish Gambino, This Is America video again?
That should be our new anthem, in fact. Like, I would like to petition.
Can it actually?
That should be our new anthem. Can we get that going?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? It's just, like every, like, sports time, like, or, like, the Olympics. They're all standing there with the gold medals. And they're just, like, ready. Don't catch you slipping up. Like,
I will bop to that because it'll speak to the truth of what this country really is. I'm fine. Like, let's have some truth. I'm all about truth because I'll take the good, the bad, and the ugly, but we just need to, like, you know, get it all. Here was the kicker of this shenanigans of a day. Is a Representative Park Cannon. She is a Democrat. And listen, if Republicans can just be sane, I'm totally fine. I want multiple parties. I don't want just a one-party system. Like, check me in my hippie ideas. Like, I can go too far. Anyways. She was like, this is too much. She was like, okay, fine. Y'all about to sign this racist ass bill. I am a local legislator. I want to witness this. They had a little Brian Kemp. Remember him? He is signing this bill and he's doing it like a live stream of it. And she literally is just like, well, I'm gonna come see this. Right. And she just literally politely, like, the
knocks,
the most polite knock I have probably ever seen in my entire life. She just was like, a knock, 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 knock. And the police arrest her. And she's been charged, all kinds. She's been charged. Like, and my mind immediately caught back to January 6th. And I'm like, yes, this is a caste system at work. Because on January 6th, people trying to overthrow the government, white people trying to overthrow the government, and being held down the stairs afterwards. This woman, legislator, voted to be representative for her people, just trying to witness a racist Jim Crow law that was going to strip the rights of human beings, was arrested.
Let's say, I mean, like, maybe like, the cue is not to knock. Maybe you just break in and storm a building and threaten people's lives.
Yeah. Well, if you are the right skin tone, then absolutely those are your rules.
Maybe.
She couldn't even politely knock. And I ring the alarms on this because this isn't just happening. Florida is also doing a very similar bill. So here's what's so bananas about, like, our, this is why it's so important that we pass S1, which is the HR1 bill about the Voting Rights Act. And is because we got to get money out of politics, because all of these bills coming to these Republican states are actually just being funded by like the Koch brothers, yeah. and they literally have written the laws by them. And there was the interview. There was like a, I don't know, someone's recording. People are always recording something. Like, is everyone trying to do
honestly,
a podcast?
Honestly, like, here I am recording this right now. I just, I want it on the record.
But I'm aware. But I am aware that you are Linda tripping me, rest in power. I don't know if Linda Tripp gets the rest in power, but
she gets to rest. Let's not push.
Okay, Linda Tripp rest. Good call. So, but they were talking about like when they take out all of like the political messaging behind, you know, getting. So billionaires can't buy elections and just having like fair elections, even Republicans, just as much as Democrats, are in favor of it. Like, that's how popular these things are. And it's just so wild to me that like the Republicans at this point don't have an actual, they don't have an actual game plan. They don't have an actual thing that they stand for, as opposed to the will of the people is actually saying, we want to move this. Like, go Joe, mm-hmm. like Joe Manchin should actually be the new Republic. Like, he's where the Republican Party should be, right? And then he can go be a Republican and we can move on, because like the country's trying to move further to the left. But these Republicans are holding the feet to actually where the country actually is. And when they started sprinkling messages of AOC into the language, then Republicans were not in favor of it. They're like, well, this will make AOC happy. And they'll be like, oh, well, we don't want that. It'll allow her to do what she wants easier. They're like, we don't want that.
She's just trying to help. And it's, I love her. I do. There's something I think that she's captured in terms of like transparency.
Yes.
Right? You yeah. know, and like being honest about things like compromises, and you work with people on the floor and like these things happen, and sort of like letting people have a more like a better understanding of what goes on in the day to day, you know, and that she's sort of pulled the curtain back just like a tiny bit.
Yeah.
And as much as she's like pointed out the inequities, like she also obviously like very much believes in democracy and is really trying to like fight within the rules and change the rules that need to be changed. Like, but they talk about her like she is some like
demon.
Crazed anarchist who like breathes fire and castrates men over 50, which like the dream. But like, you know, I don't know. The way that they talk about her really does make it seem like she is the devil. Like it's so crazy to me.
She has like, they are so like shaky. They are terrified. They're terrified of her. And it is a great weapon. Like, it's this weapon of, and it's, I know. And here's the other thing in the two, I think like, again, I think it's a scapegoat, because they can't do that shit with Cori Bush. Cause you can't do that shit with Cori Bush. She's not gonna play those games. And their politics are very similarly aligned. And so I think it's because she obviously she's a woman, but she's a Latina woman. And so she's a little bit kind of not naked out there, but kind of out there alone. Like, they doesn't, again, like in the same way that like I think like there's like certain for folks in the middle of the caste system, but y'all really, I mean, listen, there's two levels. Y'all either white or you're not. But there is like a pyramid to the caste system, and I'm not trying to play the oppression Olympics because nobody wins.
Nobody wins.
Everybody gets
like it's. I mean, it's one of those things. Everybody where it's like, gets that's a medal made out of poop.
Yeah, everyone gets a poop medal. It's just shit. You won.
Mine's bigger.
This is America.
Like what? What is
great? Like, okay, yeah. So, but because she's a Latina, I think she is kind of a little bit more out there. There's not. I think it's starting to shift, and I think it's starting to change a little bit. Yeah. But I think that's why they're able to go after her much more easily than even Ayanna Pressley. Yeah, you gotta come after Ayanna Pressley. You kidding me? Get out of here.
No.
I almost said Stacey Dash. Y'all can go after Stacey Dash if you want.
Can you imagine if Stacey Dash was a member of Congress?
Oh, God. I can't imagine. And it's like, it's Marjorie Taylor Greene. Like, it's just, they'd be sister friends. It'd be the new Clueless.
Okay, but only if the ghost of Brittany Murphy can also like be in Congress, and she's just gonna like walk up and be like, Senator Yoho is a virgin who can't vote.
I was gonna say that. I was like you're a senator that can't vote. And then she like walks away, and then they're like, Senator Murphy will Senator Murphy, will we see you?
Mitch McConnell crying and being like, "That's way harsh."
Senator Murphy, will we see you at the hearing? I hope not sporadically. And then she gets like hit by the head, and she's like rolling with the homies. Yeah, now we're just quite clueless.
Okay, so where is the parody of Congress as Clueless? But it's just like in the font, it just says Congress.
Oh, right. Yes, yeah, yeah.
And it's just.
Okay, where are we actually? So I do want to switch gears. We're going to leading into your corner.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So I do want to talk, and I have this question. I think you're going to have more facts than I will, but like I don't even know if this was like I'm not trying to be like, well, this is the work that I've been doing, but I have been noticing the timing of it is I think really, I don't know, right. I've been noticing more like Asian representation recently in some of the viewing, and maybe it's just what I'm viewing. It could be, because I definitely know a lot of people probably did not check out Monsoon on Netflix, but a very beautiful.
You were telling me about Monsoon.
Monsoon is so amazing. Henry Golding.
Yes.
We can just drool all over him for a hot second. So Henry Golding, it's the first time I ever saw an LGBT love story. Not even a love story. It's a story, and it features not a white person involved in it. It's Henry Golding, and then this other, we'll have to put it in the fact check, but this beautiful black man, and it takes place in Vietnam. He is going back home from England to Vietnam to find a resting place for his parents who have died. So it's this coming home story. And I think you hear a lot of folks who from many different cultures that when they go back home, even hear this from black people when they go back to Africa, they're like, it's this weird sort of you're home, but you're not really home. And in the movie, he just happens to be gay. There's no shame about it or anything like that. And it also talks about the awkwardness of dating and there's even just sort of conversations because the black guy, his dad fought in the Vietnam War. And it's interesting because even his monologue, I don't know, had so much more power because it was a black man talking about it as opposed to like this white man, which then just sort of seems like this, it would have been this like fetishization sort of imperialistness of it.
Yeah.
But you have these two people who both have had the effects of white colonial imperialism finding love and navigating. So that's just chef's kiss, beautiful, yeah. Monsoon, Netflix. And then like Falcon and Winter Soldier, the first episode, Bucky, like there just was Asian American representation and he's going on a date with an Asian American girl. And I'm just
or like WandaVision with Randall Park, just like living life.
Yeah. And it's just like, and it's insane that it's just like, it's such a big deal, but it is because you just don't see it that often. The new The Irregulars on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I think you would fucking love the shit out of it.
Add it to the queue.
I've been kind of just like, I got HBO Max, so I'm not really, I feel like Netflix, HBO has quality shit. I feel like sometimes Netflix is just like, it's not what it used to be, even a few years ago. They're just pumping things out.
They're giving parts to Asian people, so I'm just like, all right.
Okay, yes, that is true. So I am, yes.
But it's also just, there's such a like huge divide in their good stuff and their not good stuff.
Yeah.
Like the quality is like off the wall.
Right. There used to be a moment, there was a time when it was just like, oh, a Netflix show. Like it was like prestige, and there'd be like a few here and there. And now they're just like,
it was like, what is this? Orange is the New Black you speak of?
What? Yes. What is?
Women who look like regular women in a jail. My God.
Tell me more. But The Irregulars, to pitch this to y'all, it is sort of, it's sort of like weekly, even though like all the episodes are out, but it's like a monster of the week sort of set in
British,
old-timey British times, the world of Sherlock, but it's a group of like younger folks. I don't know if they're necessarily kids, but they're maybe like 17 to 20. The lead of the group, and they solve the mysteries for Sherlock. And part of the mystery is, who is this mysterious Sherlock who's aloof and away, and he's off camera for like, I'm only like halfway through. And there's a mystery on it, but it's also got like supernatural, creature of the week, sort of mystical things. And there's almost like the rip, the hell dimension.
That is so, that is all of my shit in one go, James.
And who is the lead? An Asian woman actress. That's what I'm just gonna, and Watson's black. So it's a diverse, old-timey casting, and not even stunt casting. Like, the background extras have all different kinds of races. The actors themselves, it's like everyone. And of course it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, British done had, like, you know, diverse people because they colonized everywhere, so everything comes back. Like, they all go back to the country too.
Look, so. Brandy's Cinderella could walk so that all of these shows could run.
It was the first.
There'd
be no Shonda Land without, you're right,
without Whitney Houston just deciding she was going to flex.
Deciding it would be possible.
That was the very first Black and Asian love interest pairing I ever remember seeing. Oh, ever.
From Cinderella to Monsoon, here we are.
Listen. Like, and it was one of those things where it's like we were all watching it as kids and being like, this Filipino man has Whoopi Goldberg as a mom, Victor Garber as a dad. And we're all, like, really okay with it. Like, we all watched it and we're like, yeah, no, duh. Like, that, yeah. No, I'm here for it.
And I don't even know if there's time for this. There's probably not. As soon as I say there's not time, my editor goes, and a cut, 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 cut. But even though the final in the, well, Sarah, Sarah, hold on before you put those scissors down, Sarah. Put the scissors down. I do want to plug
Sarah!
That the latest Justice League also had, like, the Zack Snyder version. You realize that the Asian American character, the Asian character, was completely cut out of the Joss Whedon version, as well as, like, we're on the same side of the white supremacist or the caste system, because even Cyborg, black character, his part was whittled down in the Joss Whedon version.
I was reading about that. How about in the Zack Snyder version, everyone's like, oh, there's all the cool shit for Cyborg. Like, everyone's like, Ray Fisher was done dirty.
Now you understand, like, why he was, you know, upset, or even just, like, and then adding on to that, the, like, what he was dealing with probably on set. And he just had such a more, like, the whole entire thing, they're like, well, we don't, you know, no one wants to see a black man just being angry all the time. And, but he just was being a human being who had this anger.
You mean, like, being a person? Exactly.
And then they were like, you gotta
say, like, you just you don't wanna, like,
catchphrase, say booyah. And he's like, I don't wanna say. And booyah was just from the Teen Titans cartoon, not even, like, in the comics.
Okay, I was religiously into Teen Titans, P.S. Just, oh my gosh, James, have you heard about the show? Oh god, now this name is Invincible?
Yeah, I've been watching it. Yeah.
On Amazon Prime?
How is it? It's very wild. It's interesting. It's doing some things. It's definitely not for kids. Really violent. The drama is palpable. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see where it goes. Most definitely, yes.
Look, I was sitting there like, I'm sorry, but in this universe, J.K. Simmons and Sandra Oh had a baby. And that baby has such powers.
But that, again, too, like you said, Invincible, great shout out. Like, it has, like, Steven Yeun? Am I saying Yeun? Yeun. Someone said it differently, mm-hmm. And then I was like, I've been saying it wrong this entire time. But from Minari, he is the lead character. Sandra Oh is in it. And again, like, so it's like, I don't know, like, this wave of, it's almost like somebody knew that, like, we were going to be needing, and now more than ever, more representation, because it's coming, mm-hmm. It's here, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you were talking about, like, representation, and about how it's, like, it seems like we're trucking along, we're, like, doing a much better job, we have, like, you know, for Asian people, it's kind of, like, a grain of salt situation. Because when you actually break down the numbers, it's not
okay.
As good as it seems.
I feel like it's time. We better. All right. Yeah, take us to it. So we're going to. That is nice.
All right.
We're going to go to your corner, because things seem like they're getting better, but that could just be on the surface level. And you know what it probably is? It's just the way that you notice. And when you notice something, that means, because you want to get to the point where you don't even have to notice.
Yeah, look, if you're looking at, like, a bowl of of jelly beans and they're all green, like, and there's like two red jelly beans, you're gonna be like, oh my god, we got some red jelly beans.
Hey, it's John Moe. And look, these are challenging times for our mental and emotional health. I get it. That's why I'm so excited for my new podcast, Depresh Mode. We're tackling depression, anxiety, trauma, stress, the kinds of things that are just super common but don't get talked about nearly enough. Conversations that are illuminating, honest, and sometimes pretty funny with folks like Patton Oswalt, Open Mike Eagle, and Kelsey Dara.
Now I can kind of go like, oh yeah, there's that thing where I feel like I'm in a video game and my hands aren't real and I'm living the Truman Show. Okay, this too shall pass.
Plus psychiatrists, psychologists, and all kinds of folks. On Depresh Mode, we're working together, learning, helping each other out. We're a team. Join our team. Depresh Mode for maximum fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so the numbers are in. The numbers are in.
The numbers are in. Do you want to start with Broadway numbers or do you want to start with Hollywood numbers? Because I did both.
Well, we were just talking about Hollywood. So what are the... So you just calculated the numbers.
You know, so the UCLA Hollywood Diversity Report for 2019 came out, right? And so the majority of top film roles in Hollywood went to white actors. I think we were all like, no way. But, you know, here we are with the facts.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me the majority? No. What?
Yes.
Okay, yes, of course.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but the MCU has a lot of Chrises and they're all white Chrises.
Wow, it's true. We can't even get a black Chris.
We can't even get a black Chris. We can't even get like an Anybody Hates Chris.
Sidebar, exciting news about the MCU, though. Do you know what movie was supposed to come out in February? Was Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And so I can't wait because I think, like, it matters. Like, having your own heroes matter.
It really
does. I think,
does.
Like, it's going to make a huge... I think it's going to make, not like a huge difference, but it's going to start making a difference.
Sidebar, have you seen Raya and the Last Dragon?
I have. And we can... Yes. So good. So good.
Listen, I didn't know... Movie. Spoilers... Just everyone can pause. We'll do a timestamp. I don't care. I know it was queer baiting and I don't fucking care. I ate that shit up.
Oh, yeah.
I ate that shit up.
They were gay. The two gay ladies.
They literally meet at the party and they're like, do you like to dress up? No, I prefer to be in my casual clothes and I like to fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was like, friends to enemies to lovers?
I mean, it's a classic story. Don't worry, we'll get there. We're getting
the haircut,
there. It's there.
Like, come on.
Yeah, I knew from, you know, moment one. Thank you, Disney. You're trucking along here. I appreciate.
Mm-hmm. I was just you know what? Like, it's. I'll get it.
It was a cool world that they built. I love the different the representation. I thought it was just. I loved all the different tribes as well, and the coming together.
They
the
did
themes.
A great job.
Amazing,
like, genuinely,
such a good movie. Yeah.
There was also this. They did this with Moana as well. I know people were there are people who are like, well, I didn't like that they just like made up a culture, and it's like, well, no, they took influences from several so that a lot of different people could feel represented. You know,
similar to Wakanda's not real. Everybody, are we upset about that? Like,
yes, but like, thanks for rubbing it in. I want to know what
not
kind
real.
Of life will lead Shea Coulee.
Whoa, yeah,
Drag Race.
There it is. I'm here for it. Give us
listen.
It. So, I wish we could just. So what? So the numbers are still not great, even though
are not great.
We just named a bunch of Asian American representation. Like, come on.
I mean, honestly, I was like, wow, we named at least three actors. That's like six of them that get jobs. So, most of the roles in Hollywood went to white actors. It was 67.3%. And that's down from the year before when it was 69.1%.
Oh. Okay, we're going in the wrong direction.
No, it went down. So white actors went down.
Oh,
we stole that percent Ooh. And a half. We were like, we're coming
right.
for you.
Okay, good. You know? Keep chiseling away.
But of the rest of the percentages of leads, only 15.7% were black. Only 4.6% were Latinx. only 5% were Asian, 6.2% identified as multiracial, only 0.7% were Middle Eastern North African, and indigenous actors only made up 0.5% of all film leads in 2019.
It's, yeah, but I will say, what is the breakdown of America though? Do we have those numbers? Can we Google those numbers? Okay. Yeah, I still see. So I have, it looks like so 60% white, 18% Hispanic. So those numbers, what were the numbers for Latino?
Those gotta come up. Next, that was 4.6.
Oh, there's a lot of room. We gotta go. A lot of room. Black people holding strong, you know, we might have made it. I think we got our numbers. You said what, 13%? 15?
No, 15.7.
Well, we are actually 12% of the population.
Look, you deserve more film roles.
I'm here for it. Because also,
I'm trying to get you hired. Come on.
I know. But were you talking about leads or just like in general? Those are leads?
We're talking just leads.
I feel like that number is higher than what I
would have thought.
How I myself have seen. Yeah. Because I also would have thought, I'm curious about how much money certain movies get. Because are we talking about like, I don't know, some Lifetime movie that has, you know, me in it. And yes, I'm a lead actor, but like, you know, I'm not getting one of the Chris's budgets. I'm not a Chris.
Yeah, well, this is just for Hollywood okay. Like the, you know, okay. Talking like big releases, like, you know, I'm not shitting on Lifetime movies though.
Oh,
actually, I have a friend who just got a job writing for Hallmark.
Ooh, okay.
And doing like Hallmark like holiday films.
Yes.
And I was just like, take it to the bank.
I'm here. You know. Put me in Single All the Way too. I'm here for it.
Oh my God. Is that a real one or did you make that up? Copyright.
No, it is a real one, actually.
Oh, it is a real
it's
one.
It's being filmed right now here in San Francisco.
Single All the Way? That's hilarious.
And it's a gay one. So we've made it.
Okay, listen.
We're making it.
Making our way downtown, progress. Walking fast.
And I need dun 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 diversity. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
And I need it.
Equity and inclusivity.
I'm here for it. Thank you, Vanessa.
Honestly, I need a line. Can I get a line? Instead of just, you know, being an Asian woman in the back with clipboard.
Yeah, that would be, you know, so James Hong, there was an article in Vulture and he was, you know, essentially talking about similarly like the lack of roles for Asian folks in Hollywood and sometimes to the point where they would go to white people because of the Hayes Code. I'm sorry, am I jumping the gun?
You are supporting everything that's going to come up later.
But because of the Hayes Code, sometimes, like, this would happen with Anna Mae Wong, is sometimes, like, there was a movie, I forget the name of it, but she wasn't...
The Good Seed?
Yes, they weren't allowing her to be the romantic lead in it because of the Hayes Code. So they cast a white actress to play the part instead. And that would happen
Louise
a lot.
Louise Rainer.
Yes. And that would happen a lot. Charlie Chan was played by David Carradine, was played by a white guy. And
well, at first it was played by an Asian man, and it didn't do as well until they switched over to a white man.
Okay. And it's so interesting because this would happen barely often where you're just having a white woman playing this role. It was like, well, I don't know, just don't make them just make them white then. Like, why go through all these like hoops or whatnot to do that? And then again,
well,
taking these other roles. Emma Stone, we'll just say that. Emma Stone.
As she famously said during an award show when it wasn't her turn to speak, sorry.
Gosh. Oh my gosh.
I remember watching that moment and just being like, if you're really sorry, you need to not take the spotlight off of the person of calling
just
you out
go
about it.
Donate some money or donate some time or like
you really need to not centralize yourself in this moment.
Not about you.
Like it's we're trying to hold Hollywood accountable. This isn't the place for your white tears and your white guilt.
100%. Yep.
You know, save that for your pillowcase. I'm not here for it.
No, not at all.
I'm here for your apology and your ability to have like a concise conversation, but that's not what that moment was.
But James Hong was also saying about like how, and some of you were talking about this, is that like the lack of roles, and sometimes he would have to reconcile, and this has happened like with playing, okay, and playing a stereotypical role in this moment, whether it's, this guy's been on, you know, acting for decades, whether it's like, you know, Seinfeld or one of these older movies, and playing the stereotypical role, but it's like, well, I still have to put food on the table, right? And like, they're just gonna probably cast somebody else. But, you know, some, and every actor has their threshold, even for myself, where I'm just like, okay, I'm not gonna play like, you know, one dimensional, like, you know, person who's in a gang or something. Or I played a servant once, and I was like, never again. I had three lines in a play, and I was like, we could have done something so different for this stupid Tennessee Williams play. And we
Which Tennessee Williams play?
Sweet Bird of Youth. Where a black guy gets cast, like, off stage, that gets castrated.
Yeah.
And this is right around the time of Trayvon Martin. And we had such an opportunity that only a black person in the cast, only person of color in the cast. And, like, we could have an opportunity to come together and have a conversation. Or it's theater. We could have done something to highlight what was really happening in the world of this play. And we chose to just put it up as if it was still 1950 something or other. And I just was like, I'll never let my black body be used to just further certain narratives. I am more than that.
I remember I did a commercial once, and it was like a 3-day shoot. It was like, I was like the lead in this commercial. And there was a part of the commercial where, this part was cool, there was a theater covered in posters of my face. And we shot outside a theater with posters of my face on it. I will say, I was like, oh, this is dope. However, when we did the shoot, they were taking my picture and doing the whole thing to get the posters printed. And the character's name was Sue, like S-U-E, like a not racially specific Sue. And they asked me, they were like, okay, so we're going to put Sue's name on the posters, but we haven't thought of a last name yet. We wanted to ask, like, to be sensitive, like, what is your ethnic background? And I was like, oh, like, I'm half Irish and half Filipino. And I saw the kind of, like, look on both of their faces, because it was two white men. And the kind of like quiet sort of like panic. And I was like, I know that I look more East Asian, but I am Filipino. And they kind of like sat for a second. And then one of them looked at me and literally said in like the nicest way, well, would you rather be Chinese or Japanese? And I like was like, honestly, since I'm neither, you can just pick whichever one you want.
Oh my God.
And it was one of those moments where I was like, I'm not putting myself in a position to answer that question for you. Like, if you're not going to give me a Filipino last name, like at least own that. But that wasn't my decision. So my last name was Chen.
Wow.
There were posters all over with like that name on it. We didn't even use the shots from like that scene in the commercial, I don't think, because it like aired in Asia. But it was just, it was one of those moments where I remember being like, I understand that that was their way of being like progressive and sensitive. And the fact that it was still so jarring and not appropriate kind of just shows why we need to be able to have more nuanced conversations. Because as you know, it's like oftentimes the worst microaggressions are given to you with like a smile and an ice cream. And you have to just kind of be like, you are trying so hard and I don't know exactly how to address it. So I'm going to take the ice cream because I'm 20 years old. Like, you know, it's.
You got to eat. And that's what, you know, James Hong was saying too. At the end of the day, sometimes it's about, you know, working. And what he would do is really would turn what would be stereotypical roles and at least bring some flavor to it and do something really different with it. And there are some roles to this point where he would just like, I'm not going to accept this or take this. So ideally there's more work for us to do, and there's not, you know, the stereotypical writing. Let's move beyond that. So that was Hollywood. Are we now going, take me, fuck Hollywood. Yeah. Take me to the real artist. Take me to the theater. Take me to the,
let's go to Broadway. So I don't know if you are aware of this, but there is an organization called the Asian American Performers Actors Coalition, and it was started in 2011 because a bunch of Asian actors in New York were like, hey, we feel like we're not getting represented. Do we have any like stats about what's going on? And after hearing everybody's stories, they like started officially just sort of like taking tallies of like racial breakdowns in the New York theater scene for Broadway and the scene at large. So like all of the like nonprofits and big equity houses in the greater New York area as well. And they did it, but they did it for everyone. So like race, and they did it for directors, for writers, for actors. They talked about women compared to men. They got pay discrepancy. Like it was, they like really went in. They were like, we need full transparency about this in order to be better.
Yes, they do.
So they did a collection of all of the stats from 2006 to 2011, got them all compiled, and then they did like a huge forum. And since then, they've done it every year for every performance season and sort of like shown what the breakdowns are. So the most recent one I was able to find was only the 2018 season, because I think they were probably still calculating 2019 when like COVID happened.
The pandemic
like,
hit everybody. Go home. Stop counting.
The most depressing.
Stop counting. Go home. Go home.
So on that, it sort of almost exactly mirrors exactly what's going on in Hollywood, weirdly enough. So on Broadway that year, 66.4% of roles on Broadway were given to white actors, just across the board. Of that, 22.7 were black for everyone else, 5% Asian, 3.2% Latinx, 2.1% Middle Eastern or North African, and only 0.2%
Indigenous.
Okay,
well, these
Latin
numbers really suck across the board, for sure. And
they're really bad. And it's really insulting because, like, when In the Heights came out and then Hamilton came out, everyone was like, oh my, it's such a good time to be, you know, Hispanic, to be Mexican, you know, all these like white, like martini, like ladies who are the art, like artistic whatever's at theaters. Like it's a good time to be but the numbers are like, it's never a good time
and
to be me.
What were the black numbers for Broadway? What did I hear?
22.7.
Now we kill it on Broadway. Now that makes sense, because y'all need to come correct with that. Put us on the stage.
I mean, it's also the fact they're always like, "Hey, like, we need someone to sing the riff. Can we?
Right?
Can we cast?
Yes.
You know,
but I will say, I feel like there does tend to be more sort of all black productions, and I think that also helps with driving
that
those numbers up.
That was actually the year
of The Color Purple.
It was the year that Twelfth Night went up at the Public.
Okay, yep, seen
so,
it. Get those numbers up.
That was, yeah. So, and also, Condoleezza Rashad was the lead in St. Joan at the Manhattan Theater Club. Joshua Henry was the lead in Carousel. These are the roles that were traditionally, like, you know, not either non-racially specific or traditionally played by white people. Funnily enough, they also have a stat for that. Of within, like, all of the roles that are non-racially specific, like roles that could be played by anybody, only 20% of them went to people of color. So even when race was not a factor.
Okay, that's where I think.
Even when race is not a factor, only 1 in 5. And of that, 11.9% were black, 3.7% were Latinx, 3.2% were Asian, 1.2% were Middle Eastern North African, 0% were indigenous. And that was the highest percentage of diversity that they had seen in 12 years.
Wow. So those numbers definitely need specific work, but it also goes to show you that the other numbers are high. Like, it's almost like I would imagine probably a lot of writers of color are specifically writing, hey, this is a Latin role or this is a black role, because otherwise they're not going to get their work unless they specifically write themselves for it.
Statistically, that's what it showed, is that a show that has like a writer who's a person of color, it boosts really, really high the number of, but they also found that most of the shows written by people of color that were successful had white actors in them or had like a cast that was like a distinct percentage Caucasian. And part of that has to do with, having to cater to white sensibilities of like, oh, maybe they won't go see a play with like all black
especially
people.
Especially on Broadway, because I could imagine even if you like look at the demographics, I know that it often, I can't tell you how many times I went to Broadway and saw a show that was like a black show, and I look around, I'm like, how am I going to be one of five black people here? And yeah. It's a show, it's an all-black cast, and talking about black things and black issues, and a lot of old white people here, which is great. I'm glad that you're here. And so I guess that would make sense, too, of why folks feel like they have to write those roles for that.
But also, this is when it starts getting insidious. This is when we're like, okay, so of that, 95% of the plays and musicals produced on Broadway that year were written by white people. And 93.8% were directed by white people.
There's the work. There's the homework assignment. Okay, now we're getting into the work. And because I would also be curious, too, I bet for even in Hollywood for directing, I know those numbers are also really... When you start getting to the top, like, that's where the work really needs to start happening. Or even behind the scenes or producing. There's the work.
Yep.
Because it also makes me a little nervous. Because who's directing and telling these stories and these, you know, black and brown bodies?
It's usually a white director.
And it makes me a little nervous about how they're getting... What was it, 22? Because that's when you start getting a white director telling you, you need to go say booyah. And you're like, but what? I am talking about the civil rights movement. Why would I say booyah in this moment?
As Martin Luther King Jr. once said, booyah.
Yeah, don't you think at the end Martin Luther King Jr. this moment should say booyah? No, I don't, Mr. White Director. I do not think that.
You're like, you don't think Malcolm X said that wasn't that him?
No, I don't. I think you're wrong. Let's have you holding a bucket of fried chicken. Okay. All right. Yeah, more numbers.
Yeah, so let's see. So what was it? 22 out of 34 productions about people of color were directed by white people.
Yeah.
And so getting off of Broadway for a second, just in the New York theater scene at large. On average, white actors made $1.70 for every dollar made by a person of color.
Yeah, there we go. There's let's get the number.
So they just consistently made almost double. Most of the numbers stay pretty much the same in terms of like 79.1% of plays were written by white people. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's like the percentages are really lean. But also 18 artistic directors in the greater New York area off of Broadway. 100% white.
Oh my God.
All of the artistic directors were white. And one of the things they do in the breakdown, which you can download on their website, they have the full breakdown.
We'll put it in the show notes.
You can go through it. It's colorful. It's got great charts. It looks good. Aesthetic. It's easy to read. Also, like talking about Asian people specifically, Asian Americans only receive 1.57% on average of the national equity contracts overall. 1.57% of all of the equity.
1.57, like one, and then 0.57, like so like 1.5%.
Yeah, so like an Asian person and a half Asian person, like every like 100 people.
Number.
Yeah. It's not.
Wow.
And on Broadway specifically, between 2017 and 2019, out of 459 available leading roles over the course of those 3 years, only 4 of them went to Asian American actors.
Yeah, I bet that was the year they redid Miss Saigon.
That was 2016.
Okay.
So that's why the number actually dropped 2% in our percentages of representation.
Because we lost Miss Saigon, which is the production.
Miss Saigon.
And why are we still doing Miss Saigon? There has to be other stories to tell.
Let me tell you something. Only 3 Asian actors have ever won a Tony Award.
And one of them was playing Miss Saigon.
And one of them was Lea Salonga in Miss Saigon. One was Ruthie Ann Miles for King and I. And the other was B.D. Wong for Best Featured Actor in M. Butterfly. You know what those shows have in common?
There's about like white people imperialism.
They are all centered around a white protagonist. All of them. The King and I is a white woman coming to civilize Asian people. Miss Saigon, we can get into it. There's a lot of controversy in the Asian American community about Miss Saigon in terms of like...
There's a romanticizing...
Shows that we're forced to do for jobs and shows that we're like, I'm tired of dying for white men, which is a huge narrative for Asian American women. I'm tired of dying for white men. And I'm tired of Asian women losing white men. Like, Harry Potter has the one Asian character who, like, just wanted to talk to Harry Potter, the person who saw Cedric Diggory die. And he blew her off, and they dismissed her as weak and overly emotional.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
A character with two last names as which is a full name.
That was our red flag back then about J.K. Rowling. She was one of my favorite characters. And when I saw it, I didn't read the books. Visually, I was like, ooh, yay. Like, I'm excited to see where she went. And then she just, like, disappeared for most of, like, she, like, disappears. And they bring her back in the last one for, like, a hot second. They're like, oh, she's over there. No one, you know, Cho Chang. Is that?
Also, that actress was so harassed and bullied online.
Trust me, I redid a Harry Potter rewatch. I was like, oh, what's she up to now? And she's done. So, got it.
Yeah. That is actually one of the things I'm so proud of Kelly Marie Tran.
Mm-hmm.
And about everything that happened with Star Wars. And then, like, rising literally from, like, the ashes of her destroyed media presence after she got bombarded with hatred. And being able to be the lead and a new princess in the Disney canon. Like, honestly, like, it, and just showing up the premiere in the traditional outfit, just looking, like, so beautiful. And Awkwafina came in a sweater because it was all online. So Kelly's, like, done up. And then Awkwafina comes on and goes, oh, my God, Kelly, you look so beautiful on your sweater. it was so beautiful. So it's all of the shows that we're getting credit for are centered around white pain.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things where it's like, what I would give to just have shows not centered around Asian women and Asian men fawning over white men. What I would give, you know? I mean, we have like Flower Drum Song, but that was written by white people forever ago. It was also the only musical with Asian American leads.
Huh. Wow.
Ever.
I mean,
just the one.
It's well over, you know, well overdue, well over time.
The only movie musical.
It seems, and like you kind of did Hollywood a favor by not diving in deep into the behind the scenes numbers, because the front facing numbers seem like they're on a good trend, but I imagine the back numbers. So, all right, so you know, thanks for bringing this to light. Looks like there's still more work to do, and of course. Representation absolutely matters, because what we see reflects how we see ourselves and how we see each other, creates empathy. And so the work still needs to get done.
And it's also a matter of like award seasons. Mm-hmm. Like when you break down the numbers for that, they are terrible. So Asian Americans only made up 1% of Emmy nominations in 2020. And that's down from 2% in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Asian Americans only make up 4% of series regulars overall. And of that, only 0.2% are Pacific Islander. Because most of those roles go to East Asian people.
Right, yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, yes, it's like we talk about how it's like, oh, we have Fresh Off the Boat. We have Never Have I Ever. We have like the Mindy Project. You know, there was Master of None and like Warriors, which, you know, it's... I haven't, that's on my docket too. I have so many things I have to watch.
I love all of those.
But it's the fact that like when these things come out and people's reaction is like, oh, like we're doing it. Like you have a movie, you have this. And we're like, yeah, but like when you stack it up with literally everything else, it's like no Asian woman has ever won an Oscar for best actress, but a white woman has won one for playing an Asian woman. From The Good Seed.
Oh, yeah.
She won the Oscar.
That was Anna Mae Wong's award.
It was Anna Mae Wong's award. Not only that, but Anna Mae Wong on that film, when she was denied the chance to be the lead because of the Hays Code, they were like, however, we'll throw you a bone and you can be cast as a whore. There was a concubine character. Right. And Anna Mae Wong literally went, you're really going to tell me that my crumbs are going to be the unforgivable, like, only bad character in this whole fucking show? No. And she turned it down.
Yeah.
Because she was like, I'm not your whore.
Mm.
Like, she really was like, no. Also, one of the earliest successful film actors in Hollywood for silent film was an Asian man.
Mm. You're right.
And he had to leave during, like, negative sentiments in World War II.
Oh, wow.
And, like, all this stuff. So, like, no Asian woman has ever won for Best Actress. The first and only woman to ever win an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress was 1957, Miyoshi Yumeki, who was Japanese-American. And that was right after Japanese internment.
Interesting.
And then you also have... It's just hard because, like, this year we have great news.
Right.
Steven is out there doing it for us.
Yes.
And it's also the first year two Asian men have been nominated at the same time.
Right, yeah.
Because Riz Ahmed is nominated for Sound of Metal.
Right.
Which is so wild to me. We've never had two Asian men nominated at the same time.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to think of the last time I had really even seen this. And I think it goes back to, like, when you can point and say, look, we have representation there. When you can point it out, it means it's not good, right? It means like you...
It's the bowl of jelly beans.
Bring it back to the jelly beans. When you have to point it out, it means that we're not there yet. It's not great.
Yeah, it's hard because it's... Like, only two Asian actors have won the Academy Award, right? It's Ben Kingsley. Famously, he's half Indian, and I know a lot of people were mad because he's half, but I was like, he's Asian.
Then we start getting into the colorism game, which that is probably, exactly. Is his career helped because he is of lighter skin? Probably. But, like, it's not his fault. Like, he's out there doing his work and doing the work.
Yeah, he was an Indian man playing, like, an Indian character. Right. And, like, I understand, like, genuinely.
Yes.
As a biracial person, it's very awkward being in spaces where people don't think you're Asian enough. Mm-hmm. A dual identity is two things. It's not half of two things. Mm-hmm. It's two wholes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's one of those things where I am not Filipino, like, looking, but I am not white passing.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I know that in casting, my looking East Asian got me a lot more opportunities than a lot of my, like, Filipina, like, sisters who, like, couldn't get in the room.
Right.
And, of course, that has now backfired because I look East Asian, and now when I go outside, like, people want to spit on me. I remember... The last time I was, like, out on a subway, I was with Emmanuel. And Emmanuel's my partner, for anybody. Sorry, I'm not single. but I was taken, with Emmanuel.
She's taken.
There was only one other person waiting for the train with us. And we're in Inwood. It's taken forever. We don't know if it's ever going to come. Mm. And I have been really careful and really paranoid. I've gone outside maybe, like, 11 times since the pandemic started because I have a health issue. So we were out because we were checking out a new apartment because we were moving. And this man came up to us, no mask, and just started, like, ranting. And then he started talking about how this was China's conspiracy and about how Asian people did this and about how they were trying to usurp, like, you know, our government and did it on purpose. And I remember distinctly, I had to pretend to fall asleep.
Oh my God.
On Emmanuel. So this man would not realize I was Asian and he would not see the shape of my eyes. And I just had to, like, lean into him and put my head on his chest and pretend I was sleeping and that I was tired. And I remember just being like, what, like, hellish reality is this?
Right.
Because, like, I'm also, we have met. Hello, James. I'm also, like, a mouthy fucking bitch, right? Like,
and bitch in that empowering way, because she's, like, an HBIC.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, that's where we're taking that.
It's 1,000%. The first time I saw somebody yelling at someone on the subway, I got in a fight with a grown man, 6'2", screaming how he hated Asian people, telling this, like, college-age kid he's not fuckable, screaming at an Asian grandma next to him. And I got in his fucking face.
Wow.
And I was screaming and I was fighting and I was doing all this stuff. And I think it was that false sort of, like, the shock of them being like, oh, like, she's fighting back. Mm-hmm. And now it doesn't matter.
Right.
Now it's like somebody is really angry and ranting at us on the train. And all of a sudden I'm like, nothing is going to stop this man from just straight punching me in the face.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's just... I'm angry because I was never afraid before.
Mm.
I was cautious, but I was never scared.
Mm-hmm.
And now I am.
Mm.
And it's a really sort of like, it's why our representation in media is important.
Mm.
Because our stories are not told. And so people don't know that we face discrimination, that we have problems.
Right.
you know? And it's hard because, like, we get shown in these stereotypes of being, like, passive and weak, or, like, men are super desexualized and women are hypersexualized. And they all go against, like, very basic things. Like, Crazy Rich Asians was great. I loved it. But at the same time, it perpetuates the stereotype that Asian people are, like, all successful. Mm-hmm. Asian people have the highest wealth disparity in the United States. Mm. The richest Asian families make 8.7% more than the poorest families. Mm. 1 in 5 Asian families lives below the poverty line in the United States. And you would never know.
Right.
You'd never know, because all anybody sees is we're, like, wacky, fun scientists and whores. Or we're, like, IT friends and, like, goofy sidekick characters. But, like, they're not our stories really being told. We're, like, decoration.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else is also, you know, you look at the numbers behind the scenes you see in Hollywood or even on Broadway, someone else who's writing these stories or saying, okay, I'm going to get you in for that role. And so I think it's making space. Like, it's, all right, y'all, there's so many stories that I know that y'all are, like, itching to tell, and I want to hear.
Yeah. And I don't like that the only stories people are hearing about us or caring about now are that we're dying. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like that, you know, most people don't realize, like, Asian Americans have been, like, a huge part of civil rights from the very beginning. You know, yeah. Like, Yellow Panthers and, like, you know, the great, like, all of the great protests with agriculture, like, Asian Americans were there, Filipino Americans were there, mm-hmm. like, civil rights, like, we were there. And for Black Lives Matter, I know that one of the hardest things about what happened in Atlanta and all of the, like, crimes that are happening now is that we're really still trying to be, like, do not let this distract from, like, the greater conversation of race. Like, a lot of people will be like, oh, well, yeah, that woman who had her head stomped in New York, that was a Black man. And I'm like, it's not about whether he was a Black man. Don't make this about it being a Black versus Asian thing. Right. This is a white supremacy thing. This is, we made this rhetoric and, like, allowed people to scapegoat Asian people. So people who are at risk, who are suffering, who are, like, being systemically, like, disenfranchised by this disease, they're not just Black people. Mm-hmm. We're getting attacked by white people all the fucking time. Mm-hmm. White people are spitters. I don't know if you know that.
Mm.
I've been spit on by a lot of white men.
Mm.
And I spit back.
Oh, she spits back. I want to see that story off to Broadway. I want
There's
to see
There's a hat
that,
actually being sold right now on, what's it called? On a Unapologetically Asian, which is a great, like, Asian rights organization that does a lot of, like a lot of awareness stuff and links to, like, different charities. They have a hat and a shirt right now. They're selling that says Asian Slap Back because of that grandma in San Francisco.
Yes, not playing.
And about that whole thing going on in San Francisco, the Slap an Asian Challenge in San Francisco right now.
Mm.
I think that the most important thing for the AAPI community is just recognition beyond horror.
Mm.
Like, it has to be about Asian stories and Asian joy and Asian representation. Because if all people see are us being, like, meek and hypersexualized and easy to take advantage of and, like, shoved to the side, like, that's all we're going to be in the greater narrative of this country. Mm-hmm. We've been erased enough. They don't teach about Japanese internment in most schools.
Japanese American internment. And then, because they were,
that was an American internment.
Yeah.
Like, we don't teach about it. We don't talk about it, mm-hmm. you know? Or just, like, what we did to Hawaii.
Oh yeah, we'll put that in a we'll be talking about it on this podcast. Don't you worry.
You know, it's all we need is an opportunity to show that, like, we have a story and it's not a good one. It's been a lot of suffering, and it's been a lot of suffering in silence because of the idea that people just don't care about us, and that, you know, a lot of it has been wait your turn, be patient, work hard, like, prove them wrong is the big narrative in Asian families. Be like, oh, they think you're poor, they think you stink, they think you're gross. Like, you have to prove them wrong, be the most successful thing you can be. And then they turn that around and they make it the narrative that if we can do it, why can't other people of color? And they make our success a weapon. And it's honestly just like, we deserve better than that. And the first place to start is just letting us tell our stories.
Woo! There it is. There it is. Teresa, always such a pleasure. And it's always such a pleasure so much. She's going to be back next week, and we're going to dive deeper into these conversations about this racial reckoning that we are having for both all POC communities, and healing the divide between the AAPI community and the Black community stronger together. And we're going to dive into Vincent Chin. Do you know about Vincent Chin? Well, we're going to dive into that next week. Okay, quick little fact check here. I said David Carradine played Charlie Chan. That's not correct. He did not play Charlie Chan. Charlie Chan was played by Warner Olin, you know, Swedish-American actor who was famous for playing Chinese and Chinese-American characters. Problematic. But David Carradine did play the Asian lead in Kung Fu, the TV series, in 1972. So still problematic. And David Carradine, if you've ever seen Kill Bill, he's Bill, that white man. So not good, not good. Way too much of a common practice. And lastly, in case you didn't know, Georgia also did away with the way that Georgia elections are certified. So in the 2020 election, the Republican Secretary of State said, no, Trump, I'm not going to do your shenanigans. And so the local Republican legislators have done away with that job having anything to do with the certification. So if someone wants to illegally overturn an election, they can now do so. Y'all thought we were done. Ooh, and the Maximum Fun Drive is around the corner, and we are hoping to get responses from you all, of you, those of you who are members. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from you. What does Minority Corner mean to you? Why did you become a member? So we would love to hear you leave a little voicemail at 323-601-8719. Again, that is 323-601-8719. Or you can email memberstories@maximumfun.org. We'll link all of this down in the show notes. We want to hear from you, why you became a member, and what the show means to you. We want to hear from y'all. So more to come. Teresa's back next week. This will be lovely, going in even further. Good stuff. Have a wonderful week. Thank you to our editor, Sarah Brown, and our social media manager, Sam Jackson. And thank you all for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.